Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking, Hanak.
Thank you. I did receive the donation, but that's for three people or two?
Hold on 1 second. How much is it supposed to be? I can send some more if you need it.
Well, there's no rush on it, but it is 17 each, so there's a little bit more due.
Okay, I'll send it then.
I appreciate it.
Okay, no problem.
Good evening.
Good evening. I enjoyed the class last night.
I'm glad you did. It was a good class. I don't remember what I said, but that's typical.
Well, we probably go back and review it ourselves, being so late at night. So I will go back and review it.
No problem. That's what it's for. So we have two people on, so why don't we get started? We're in section 29 of the Sulam commentary of the Zohar, on the parasha of Noah, and we're starting with Pasuk 219, and I will start with the Lashon Yehud. L'shem yichud kudsha b'richu ishkin te'bit hilu urchimu udhilu udhilu urchimu le'achta l'shem yudhe b'vavhe v'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael limud Torah mitzvah la'asok Torah mitzvah v'ayino amadunai Elohim elenu ma'asei yadenu k'menenei elenu ma'asei yadenu k'menenehu v'ha'ahugi Geuta diyama uchadhuta dismala desalik leyalia yama leela uveya Istalak ve'ilav ha'u chuta demate le'ya misidra diyamida mina la'salka le'almin de'kewan de'ha'u chuta nachit le'yama V'yama itachid ba kedein itarim galgelo v'shagan umidras sarpa ad dekutsha barichu ativ le'a le'achora v'tavim le'atrayhu. The raging of the sea is the threat from the left, which causes the waves of the sea to rise, and rises with it. But had the other threat of chesed not arrived from the right, it would have never risen. For when that threat from the left goes down to the sea and is held by the sea, the waves awaken and begin to roar for prey, until the Holy One, blessed be He, restrains the waves, holds them back, and they return to their place. Questions, comments, thoughts?
I think it's talking about the wicked and the righteous. Because the water is Torah, and water is righteous individuals, right?
Yes, but it's saying that the water is being used from the left.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thread that goes from the left that goes down to the sea and is held by the sea. It's describing, you're right, exactly what you said, but the verse is saying something else. It's not really talking about righteous and wicked. It's talking about judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And the judgment is composed of two threads, one from the left and one from the right. The one from the left causes the waves of the sea to rise. It causes this upheaval. Now, the thread from the right is controlling, it's minimizing that upheaval. It's providing for a calming effect. The verse is very difficult to understand because you're looking at both right and left. One is anticipating, it's aggravating, it's exciting the waves, and the other is calming the waves.
And is it balanced?
When you have right and left together, you have central column energy.
Right. It's showing balance between the two. Okay. Right.
And I have a question.
Go ahead.
You know, metaphorically, when they speak about the sea and they talk about like river, a river being like life, a symbol for life, and the river flows into the sea, I'm just trying to understand. I'm trying to understand the connection between the river and the sea. If the river represents a flowing of life.
We read those verses yesterday and the last night, and that metaphor is, you have to put it in context. Because if you're speaking about Egypt, the metaphor of the river when it's talking about Egypt is talking about the Nile River. When you're dealing with the nation of Israel and the land of Israel, the metaphor for a river is generally speaking of the Torah. Anything having to do with water, when it comes to Israel, is dealing with Torah. So you can't just answer the question the way you posed it. It needs to be put into context. Are you talking about Egypt? Then you're talking about the Nile River. And the sea can be a metaphor for Torah. The sea can be a metaphor for the Mediterranean Sea. And the sea can be a metaphor for just positivity. So you need to know the verse and what is the context.
Okay. That makes sense.
I hope that's helpful.
It did.
It's always better to just assume that the energy of relativity needs to apply in any pursuit you read from the Zohar.
Okay.
Pasuk 220. Ahidikti viso galav atat shabichem. Tishabechem le'inun galeyama Tishabechem Tetabar lon le'atava le'atrayhu Davar acher Tishabechem Mamash shivcha Hu lon begin disalkin Beteuta lemechebe Mikan kol Shman dekasif leistakala Umimda afalgal Dila yakil shivcha Yehudi leya Bekola meshabechan leya As it is written, you rule the raging of the sea when the waves thereof rise up. You literally praise them. One interpretation is that praise, the Hebrew word teshabechem, is the same as breaking, which the Hebrew word is teshabrem, and pulling them back to their place with the thread of chesed. A different interpretation is that the meaning is literally you praise them. That is, the fact that the waves rise with the desire to see is praiseworthy. From this we can learn that whoever seeks and longs for knowledge, even if he is incapable of attaining it, is praised for his effort. Questions, comments, thoughts?
They're talking about Israel, and I think that rising up to Bina for knowledge, and that he's those that are seeking ride the wave to receive more knowledge of the Torah. He's talking about Israel coming back or bringing them back, redeeming.
No, there's no redeeming. I don't see redemption in this, but he is talking about the central column, and he's talking mm-hmm. about how the thread of chesed has to be the most more important than the thread from the left column.
Mm-hmm.
That the raging of the sea, the waves, at that time they didn't understand gravity. Now, they did understand it because they would call it the desire to receive for oneself alone. But they didn't understand what causes the waves in the sea. And this verse is trying to explain that the ocean is not a sea. The raging of the sea is really what happens in the Mediterranean Sea. You have waves. Why do they rise up? How do I explain that?
Oh, I see. And
they're coming from a frame that says, everything that happens in nature is coming from human activity. So how do I explain that human activity? How do I explain what I see in nature as it relates to human activity?
Hanak, I have a question.
Go ahead, Ruby.
Okay, in the very first sentence, as it is written, the U is capitalized. You rule the raging of the sea. And then if you go one, two, three, four sentences down, U is capitalized. Again, you praise them. When they are using you and it's capitalized that way, who's being talked about? Who's being discussed here? You praise them.
That's the children of Israel. See, if you go back one verse, maybe two verses, they will be quoting a verse in Psalms that this idea of the raging of the sea is coming from. So to really understand this pasuk, we have to look at that verse in its totality. What the verse does is it hints to it because it gives you these Hebrew words, Teshabachem and Teshabarem. And it's trying to explain it on a play on the letters of these two words. But our Hebrew isn't that sufficient that we can really follow that. So we have to go and look at the whole verse and kind of see what these words are doing and how they're interacting. I hope I'm being clear. I realize it's difficult to understand the verb. The verb is trying to explain this verse in the Tanakh and trying to let us understand what is it really being said. And it's being explained, but you have to have other information in order to understand what is being explained. I didn't mean to cut you off, Ruby. Go ahead.
No. I'm finished. You answered my question.
Okay.
I have a question. So are you saying in Noah's time that they did not know that Hashem was in control of the whole universe? That they did not know that?
They did. They understand that Hashem is in control of the whole universe. But we have learned in Bereshit, in the Parasha of Bereshit, and then also earlier in Noah, that the righteous people are given control. Hashem is delegating control of the physical world to the righteous people. And then the Zohar goes through a number of verses, section after section, that is looking at what does it mean that the righteous people have control of the physical world. What do I see in the physical world that I have to explain that I don't understand? And this is one verse that is saying, there's waves in the ocean, there's waves in the sea. What causes them? How do I explain them? If man is in control of the physical world, then man's activity must be causing these things. And then it's causing the verse to come and try and explain that, but it doesn't explain it from the standpoint of the totality of the verse. It's just hinting to these two Hebrew words and how there's a play on the letters within those words.
Okay. But, you know, in Noah's time, there was a righteous person.
There was one righteous person, which was Noah.
Right.
And his children were on the side of righteousness.
Right.
But Noah was concealed by the ark during this period. So he really wasn't in the world.
Right. Okay.
So
this verse.
What happened with the flood? The flood comes, the rain comes. The waters flow from down below that are hot. The waters come from above that are cold. Noah is not in the world. There is no righteous person in the world. How do I explain what happened in the flood? The destruction comes from the waves. The destruction comes from... But who's in control if there's no righteous people in the world?
That's my question. I'm kind of stuck there. Right. And that's my question. If there wasn't any righteous people in the world, so how do they know?
Well, there aren't any righteous people in the world does not mean there isn't a Bet Din. There isn't a court. There isn't a judgment that a person did a negative action and the negative action is going to be this kind of effect. The Bet Din is in effect. The Bet Din exists. And it continues to happen. When a righteous person is in the world, that Bet Din tends to judge in a frame of mercy. When there's no righteous person in the world, that Bet Din tends to judge in a frame of judgment and chaos.
Okay, that makes sense. That explains it a little better.
Because who sits on the Bet Din are other righteous people who have died. But their souls are still working. Their souls are still in the upper heavenly, Garden of Eden. Those souls are acting as the Bet Din.
So Noah didn't have enough merit to stop the flood.
Correct. We discussed that a few sections ago.
Mm-hmm.
Noah did not have the merit to stop the flood, but Noah did have certain merits, and we studied how those differentiated.
Well, he had enough merit to warrant starting the next generation of people. The next generation of people would come from Noah down to Abraham and so forth and so on. He had that merit.
That is correct, but those people were born to Noah and his wife prior to the flood. They weren't conceived after the flood. One of the midrashes essentially says that what happened to Noah when he got himself drunk and lost control, his son didn't want to share the world with another child, which would have been the fourth species. And therefore, he castrated his father when Noah got drunk. Now, it doesn't say that explicitly, but it's very hints at it very clearly in the Zohar. Because why would they do this to this father? You know, what happened to these children that they would harm their father? And what did they actually do? And these are the things that, you know, that the Midrash comes to explain. The questions that we ask even today. What happened? What actually happened? That's what the Midrash comes to explain.
Was it actually one of Noah's, I know Shem didn't do it. Was it one of his sons or one of the grandsons of Noah's son that did that?
It was Ham. Excuse me. It says that his son harmed him when he was drunk in his tent. But it also says that the grandson received the punishment. And the other two brothers, Shem and Japheth, covered him up. But then God punished Ham, the third son, by inflicting the punishment on the grandson to be a slave of slaves. We're pretty much out of time, so we'll finish this up on Monday.
Okay.
It may be a couple of days because there's four more verses yet.
Mm-hmm.
But three of them are small. So we'll see. We'll do it as rapidly as we can. But
all
it's
right,
always
thanks,
good
Donna.
To go into it deeper, deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight's class will be a Zohar class at 7 p.m. for the Parasha of Tetzaveh.
Okay.
Excuse me, my mistake. It's the Parasha of Truma.
Okay.
And we will... we wish everyone a Shabbat Shalom and a good week, a good Shabbat, and much peace in their life. Shalom to all.
Shalom.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you, Hannah.
Shalom.